Good morning. Everybody wants to get to the top. Our culture is consumed with advancing to the next level, climbing the ladder, achieving our dreams. It's the elusive quest for success, to find that thing that you've always wanted. We are, many of us, ambitious people. I was thinking about pictures of ambition in our contemporary media. And I think that perhaps there's no better illustration of raw, naked ambition than the brilliant political drama House of Cards. Has anybody seen this show? It features Frank Underwood, who starts off as a congressman in the House of Representatives. And then in each successive season, he manages to climb higher and higher on the political ladder. The second season of the TV show opens with him discussing something that happened at the end of the first season and him describing his general mentality, his philosophy of life. He refers back to a young woman who got in his way in the first season named Miss Barnes. You'll see a reference to her. But I want you to watch this clip and see what we can learn from Frank Underwood about getting to the top. Here it is.
I've opened some wine downstairs.
I'll be down in a minute. Did you think I'd forgotten you? Perhaps you hoped I had. Don't waste a breath mourning, Miss Barnes. Every kitten grows up to be a cat. They seem so harmless at first. Small, quiet, lapping up their saucer of milk. But once their claws get long enough, they draw blood, sometimes from the hand that feeds them. For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy. There is but one rule: hunt or be hunted. Welcome back.
For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy. There is but one rule: hunt or be hunted. That's the message of our sermon this morning. Actually, my hope is that we'll see some stories this morning that will give us a different perspective on how to handle ambition. We're about 2 months into our 10-month journey through the life of David. We're calling it a life of passion, and we've seen David change his life a little bit. We've seen him start out as a young shepherd boy. He's been anointed king, and he's on this journey that will eventually, we know, end in him being coronated king as well. But for now, he's not acting as king. In fact, the guy who's supposed to be king, Saul, isn't really acting like a king either. Saul is enraged by jealousy, and he's doing all that he can do to hunt down David and kill him. David is on the run from the current king Saul. He is a fugitive. This morning, we're looking at 1 Samuel 23 and 24. Two chapters. There's three different stories in these chapters. And each of these stories show David reacting to this unique situation that he's in a very particular way. We've seen in previous stories that David is an ambitious young man. He wants to be king. He wants badly to be king. He knows that's in his future, but his current circumstances aren't there yet. He's not experiencing yet what he wants to experience. He feels that tension of wanting to be somewhere, but not being there yet. Do you know that tension? Have you felt that in your life? Many of us are ambitious. We want something else to happen in our lives. And you might say, well, I'm not ambitious because I don't have career goals or I don't care about career advancement, but there's a lot of ways to be ambitious. I'll bet most of us have plans and hopes, dreams, ways we want our life to play out or the lives of the people we care about. We have things that we want to see happen, sometimes desperately so. We want something else, and we end up waiting for that to come. In the stories this morning, David shows us this incredible picture of how to live in that tension. It's very different from the advice of Frank Underwood. And this scene, these scenes of David are part of the highlight reel of his life. I think this is David at his best, some of his most honorable and admirable decisions. There's a unique phrase that connects each of these three stories. In each of them, we see the phrase, into his hands, or into my hands, or into your hands. First, God gives victory into David's hands. Then God doesn't give David into the hands of Saul. Then God does give Saul into the hands of David, and we see what David does with that. The question that keeps getting asked is, whose hands are worthy for the responsibility that God's going to put into them? For David and Saul, the issue is the kingdom. Whose hands are worthy of the kingdom? In whose hands will that responsibility rest? Now, I have to apologize in advance, but I'm going to geek out a little bit on the Bible. And I figure if there's anywhere where it's okay to geek out, PBC might be the place. I have a tool on my computer that allows me to do statistical searches on word frequencies within biblical chapters. You with me so far? So, turns out that there are no two consecutive chapters in the entire Old Testament that feature this phrase, into his hands or into your hands, more frequently than 1 Samuel 23 and 24. 1.5% of every word in these two chapters is this phrase. Now, there are some single chapters where this phrase occurs more frequently, one in particular where it is over 2.5% of the time. Now's the time to go, and I'm going to tell you what chapter that is in a few minutes. I know. You have to wait. All of these stories, though, are about this idea of responsibility being placed into hands. It's about what we want to have in our hands and what we do have in our hands and how we handle the difference when those things don't line up. What do you do when you want to be somewhere, but you're not there yet? Let's see what David does and see what we can learn from his example. The first story opens with a crisis. One of Israel's cities is being attacked by a foreign power. Listen to chapter 23, verse 1. Now they told David, "Behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah and are robbing the threshing floors." Now, this is why Israel wanted a king. This is the kind of situation that you need a king for. A city is being attacked when it's at its most vulnerable. It's harvest time. All the valuables are gathered together. This is the time where you need someone to come in and protect you. But the king is nowhere in sight. Notice they don't ask Saul to come help. They ask David to come help. And David does what the king of Israel is supposed to do in this kind of situation. He charges in and saves the day, except he doesn't. He does what the king of Israel is supposed to do in this situation. He asks the God of Israel what he ought to do. Actually, he asks God twice, because the first time he asks, his men are so scared by the answer that they ask him to go back and make sure. That second request is made in verse 4. Then David inquired of the Lord again, and the Lord answered him, "Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will give the Philistines into your hand." And here's the first occurrence of that phrase. The Philistines will be given into your hand. So David is encouraged. He leads his men. They go, and this story has a happy ending. Verse 5, David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their livestock and struck them with a great blow. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. David saved the city. This is what a king does. The king saves vulnerable people from danger. Now, this is a significant story because what we're watching is David acting like a king before he's actually the king. In fact, this is a textbook example of what the king of Israel is supposed to do in this situation. He hears about trouble. He asks God for wisdom. God tells him what to do. He obeys God, and he saves the day. This is the best that a king could do. But David's not yet actually the king. Think about what's going on. David's been anointed king, but Saul is actually the king. So here's David before he has that actual responsibility, acting more like a king than the guy who's sitting on the throne. He's showing up, the current king of Israel. God puts some of the responsibility of kingship into David's hands before he has the official role. And this is a helpful example for us if you want to be somewhere in life, but you're not there yet. You can fulfill a lot of the responsibilities of a role before you're actually there. You can start to act like the person that you want to become. Be who you want to become. This is actually one of the main criteria that the elders at PBC use when we are praying and trying to discern who God might be calling to be an elder in our community. We ask the question, who is already acting like an elder in our midst? The title and the official role is not the important thing. The meetings are certainly not the important thing. It's a posture toward the community. Who is already assuming this posture? Who seems like an elder without the title? And you can actually do this in a lot of areas of your life. If you want more responsibility at work, then act more responsibly. If you want to be a leader, then start empowering the people around you so that they succeed. If you'd like to be married, start acting like somebody who can care for a spouse. If you'd like to be a parent, I've got some kids I could loan you. Just kidding. Although, if you'd like to, you can. Start acting like someone who can care for kids. If you want community, start building community for others around you. There's all sorts of ways that you can step into responsibility even before you have the official title. God gave the Philistines into David's hands. He gave him that success. What might God be giving into your hands? What opportunities are there for you? What doors are open? How can you be who you want to become? Well, David was acting a lot more like a king than Saul was at this point. But as has happened several times, Saul finds out about it and he gets upset. He hears that David is in Keilah and he sees it as an opportunity. Listen to verse 7. Now it was told Saul that David had come to Keilah, and Saul said, God has given him into my hand, for he has shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars. Saul thinks that David is going to be trapped in the city and he can catch him there. He thinks that God has given David into his hand. He thinks God is on his side in this battle. David hears about this and he worries about whether it might be true. So again, he asks God what to do and he gets a painful answer. Listen to verse 12. Then David said, will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will surrender you. David has just saved the city of Keilah from the Philistines. He's risked his life. He's risked the life of his men for their sake. And he wants to know whether they're now going to stand up for him and protect him. And God says, no. They're going to turn their back on you. They're going to betray you. That stings. He acted like their king when the real king was nowhere to be found. But now when it comes down to it, they're going to turn around. They're going to turn their back on him. Now, honestly, this is often what happens when you act like who you want to become. People don't throw parades in your honor. They don't line up to thank you. Sometimes they're even critical, question your motives. They're frustrated by you. You go out of your way for someone else, and then they might not stick up for you. This is part of that calling that sometimes happens. Don't be surprised when the citizens of Keilah turn their backs on you. David sees what's about to happen, so he does the smart thing and he runs and hides. Verse 14, David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph, and Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. Once again, Saul thought that God was going to give David into his hand, but we find out here that God does not. God refuses to turn David over to Saul. In the next story, the same scene plays out with a different group of people. David is now hiding among the Ziphites, and they say, hey, this could be advantageous to us if we turn him over. So they ring up Saul and say, hey, the guy you're looking for, he's in our midst. Come and get him. We'll turn him over to you. So Saul comes with all of his men. He chases David. And this scene is kind of like Fast and Furious in the Bible. There's all this action going on. Listen to verses 26 through 29. Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul. And Saul and his men were closing in on David, and his men to capture them, a messenger came to Saul, saying, hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land. So Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines. Therefore that place was called the Rock of Escape. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi. David is saved because Saul does something entirely out of character. He acts like a king. Somebody comes and says, hey, the Philistines are raiding. We need your help. Saul is about to get David. He's about to do the thing he's wanted to do. And it's shocking that he actually decides to do the kingly thing and go protect his people from the Philistines. Why would he do this? Why does this happen? Because God intervenes. Because God led him to. Because God protected David and refused to give him over into Saul's hand. Now, sometimes we fall into the hands of evildoers. Whether it's annoying, like a boss that's difficult to work for, or devastating, like when we suffer abuse or assault. Sometimes it seems that God gives us over into the hands of our enemies. And David will feel this at other times in his life. But in this story, at this point, God intervenes. God protects him. God doesn't give him over. Have you experienced that? Maybe you're waiting for something, and God surprises you with a small kindness or some little encouragement, or things are about to get even worse, and they don't. Look for those chances. Look for God to be at work in your life in that way. Look for God's protection. 2 weeks ago, Andy Burnham, our recovery pastor, was asking for prayer for our brother's home. It's a ministry, a transitional housing ministry for men coming out of recovery. And that ministry was within about a week or two of running completely out of funds. So he was asking for prayer, he was emailing, he was posting on Facebook. And then several days later, I ran into Andy, and he had this huge grin on his face. And I just knew something was going on, and I didn't even ask him. He just started telling me, good news, someone just gave $10,000 to support our brother's home. And as it turns out, this particular donor had thought they might be led to give $10,000, and then a check that they were expecting arrived in the mail, but that was for $10,000 more than they expected to receive, which happens to all of us very frequently, I'm sure. Nonetheless, this person felt like that was God leading them to say yes and gave this donation to our brother's home. Very cool, right? Now, I was planning to tell this story for a few weeks now, for about a week and a half, but then this past week, the story got even better because Andy found a FedEx package in his mailbox and thought it was some of the details relating to this earlier donation, but when our accountant opened it, she said, actually, this is another donation to our brother's home for $40,000 more. Right? So this ministry that goes from worrying about running out of money 1 week to now asking, what might God be planning for our future? And the most amazing thing about this story is that Andy said these donations left him speechless. Now, it takes a lot to make Andy Burnham speechless. So that must have been God at work. Sometimes God comes through. Right when we think that Saul is closing in, sometimes God protects us. Look for those moments. Be encouraged by them. God rescues David, at least for the time being. He's still on the run. Think about the emotions that David has gone through. He's worried about whether he should save Keilah. So he prays, and God says yes, and he does, and it's great. But then they betray him. So he runs and he finds shelter, but then those people betray him and he runs and he's worried, and then God saves him, and it's this up and down and up and down. Life is full of that. And then after all of those things happen, something incredible happens. I think this story deserves an internet clickbait title, something like, David hides from murderous king in a cave and you'll never guess what happens next. 1 Samuel 24, 2 through 4. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the wild goats' rocks. And he came to the sheepfolds by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. And the men of David said to him, "Here is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you.'" Now, if you're trying to suppress your inner 11-year-old boy and not laugh at this story, you can laugh. This is meant to be a little comic episode. For some reason, unbeknownst to any of us, going to the bathroom for all ages has been funny. All right? A lot of intense stuff happening in this story, and now Saul is relieving himself in a cave, and we're supposed to go, "Oh, that's funny," all right? So we can laugh. But David's men aren't just laughing, they are rejoicing. They tell him, "This is your chance. You are waiting to become king. God has given Saul now into your hand. Take this opportunity. This could end today." But of course, it doesn't. David does something odd. Here's the rest of verse 4 through verse 6. Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And afterward, David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed." So David cuts off the corner of a robe, and what this probably has to do with is what Samuel told Saul earlier when he said, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you." So this is probably representative of that. The robe would be representative of the kingdom, so Saul cuts off a corner to indicate that God has taken it from him. But then David feels guilty, even for that small symbolic act. He repents that he has gone against the Lord's anointed. It's an incredible scene. David is treating Saul like the king. He's treating Saul like the king, even though Saul has pretty much completely abdicated his responsibilities as king. But David still sees him as the Lord's anointed, and he refuses to lift his hand against him. I think I would have killed Saul. I think I would have been talked into it by my men. I think I would have said, "God has given me this chance. Clearly, it's God's will, right? What are the chances of me being in this cave and Saul coming in to relieve himself here? God must have given this to me." I know Frank Underwood would have killed Saul. In fact, I can hear his southern drawl despising David for his ridiculous naivete, passing up this opportunity. Remember, it's only hunt or be hunted. This was David's chance to hunt. But David shows incredible patience and integrity. He doesn't violate the sanctity of the position of king. Now, this decision is patient, but it's also clever. Because who is the Lord's anointed right now? The Spirit has actually already left Saul. The Lord's anointed is not Saul anymore, it's David. So in doing this, David is giving his men a lesson on how to treat the Lord's anointed, how to treat him when he does assume the kingship. He's teaching them that you don't touch the Lord's anointed, even if you think he's making terrible decisions, even if God's already told you that you're going to be king, even if he's trying to kill you, even if whatever happens, you don't touch the Lord's anointed. David is honorable and savvy. A commentator noticed, David exhibits a rare goodness combined with shrewd political sense, both of which Saul conspicuously lacks. David is good and shrewd. But the surprises keep coming. Because after David has done this, after he has spared Saul, David comes out of the cave and reveals himself to Saul. He puts himself and all of his men at risk, exposing himself to the person who's trying to kill him. Listen to this, verses 14 to 15. After whom has the king of Israel come out? After whom do you pursue? After a dead dog, after a flea. May the Lord therefore be judge and give sentence between me and you and see to it and plead my cause and deliver me from your hand. David reveals himself to Saul, but invokes the name of the Lord to be judge between them. And the result of this speech is just as surprising as the speech itself. Verses 16 to 17. As soon as David had finished speaking those words to Saul, Saul said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. He said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good, whereas I have repaid you evil." He got through to Saul. Saul relents. He breaks down. And the most amazing thing comes in verse 20. "And now," Saul says, "behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand." Even David's enemy recognizes that David deserves to be king. Wow. That's an incredible thing for David to experience. God did give Saul into David's hands, but he didn't act like it. He acted like a king in protecting the city of Keilah, and again, he acts like a king here by protecting, by sparing the Lord's anointed. I think I admire David more for this decision, for this scene, than for anything else he does in his life. I'm stunned by this picture of David. Remember, he is ambitious. He wants to be king. Here is his chance. He can make it happen, but he doesn't. Think of it this way. God gave Saul into David's hands, but David left his hands open. He could have crushed Saul. He could have ended it there. He could have clenched his fists on the idea of him being king, and he could have been king that very day. But he leaves his hands open. He refuses to sacrifice his integrity, and he trusts that God will make his plans come about. How can we follow that example? Think about your own ambition. Think about the things that you want to happen in your life, your plans, your dreams, your hopes. How can you hold those things with open hands, not grasping them, but trusting God? Hold your hopes with open hands. I said earlier that there is one chapter in the Bible where this phrase, "into his hands," occurs over 2.5% of the time. Well, that chapter is Genesis 39. And it's another story of an ambitious young man who is destined for high political office, but takes an arduous journey to get there. It's the story of Joseph, who is sold into slavery into Egypt. When he gets there, he's put in Potiphar's house. And Potiphar, it is said, trusts him so much that he puts everything in his household into his hands. Then, of course, if you know the story, Potiphar's wife falls for this handsome young servant. She tries to seduce him, and he holds her back, saying, "My master has given me everything into my hands except for you." She persists, and eventually he flees. She runs off, but she leaves her cloak in his hands. Potiphar finds out about this, gets understandably upset, has Joseph thrown in jail, where then, after only a small period of time there, it is said the jailer recognizes Joseph's virtues and puts everything in the jail into Joseph's hands. So another young person who has to wait, who has to endure difficult things, waiting for God's plans to come about. I'm an ideas person. I have a lot of ideas. Some of them are probably good. Many of them aren't. But it can be hard for me to let them go. There's so many things that could be done, so many directions to go, so much that we could do. I've been learning a lot to hold ideas with open hands. What's in your hands? What are your hopes, your plans, your ambitions? Can you hold them with open hands? Recognize that that doesn't guarantee they'll happen. This isn't a tricky little device that you can do to force God into giving you what you want. Holding things with open hands means sometimes you wait and sometimes you let go. Sometimes those things are taken from you and you never receive them. But having your hands open makes that easier if that comes. How can you hold your hopes with open hands? Well, we've seen a lot of things being put into someone's hands this morning. God delivered the Philistines into the hands of David. God refused to deliver David into Saul's hands. And then God did give Saul into David's hands, and David didn't act on it. There's a Psalm 31 where a lot of these things come up. This phrase itself occurs several times. And I think, though it's not recorded, that this psalm might be written about these events. Later, though, when Jesus hangs on the cross, he quotes Psalm 31. That quote is captured in Luke 23, verse 46. Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And having said this, he breathed his last. At the end of it all, even Jesus gave his life over into the hands of the Father. Even Jesus held his plans loosely. Even to the point of the worst possible thing, the thing that cannot be undone, even to the point of death, he placed his life in God's hands. It's interesting the way God works. I'm part of a discipleship group that Eric Soderberg and I are leading. And this week, Eric asked us as a group to be praying Psalm 31 every day. So these words have been repeating in my head every day. Into your hands I commit my spirit. And I would commend Psalm 31 to you to read this week if you're interested. There's all sorts of echoes from these stories. But I'm convinced that it's this idea that allows David to do what he does in these stories. Because he trusts his life into God's hands, God gives him success. Because his life is in God's hands, God protects him. And because of that, he's able to avoid the temptation to seize the opportunity to force God's plans on his own. Do you know that? Is your life in God's hands? Are you able to rest in that knowledge? Maybe some of you have never trusted God at all. Maybe you're exploring faith. Maybe this is the time to say, nobody's hands are more worthy of my life than God the Father. Maybe you take this opportunity to finally put your trust, to put your life into the hands of God. Or maybe you have faith, but you find it difficult, like most of us do, to trust God with the things you really want to happen. How can you put your life in God's hands? How can you trust Him with those things that are closest to your heart? Most of us want certain things to happen in our lives. We have hopes and dreams, plans and ambitions. Some of them are political or career, like Frank Underwood. And maybe we're tempted by that kind of cutthroat, ambitious example that he gives us. But David has shown us a different way to handle that tension of wanting to be somewhere else this morning. We've considered ways that we can be like the people or the role that we want to become. We can start doing those things even before we're given the actual role. We've been reminded to look for ways that God protects us and encourages us along the way. And we've been inspired to hold those things with open hands, ultimately placing our lives in the hands of God as we wait. And when we do that, we are another in a long line of faithful people, whether it's Joseph suffering in prison as he waits for what God is going to do through him for his people, or David as he runs from Saul and risks himself to expose himself and waits to finally arrive at the kingship, whether it's Jesus who faces the cross, who faces death, knowing that ultimately God has something on the other side. David is formed by these experiences, by these decisions that he makes. It isn't always pretty, though. This week, we've seen something remarkable of David. Next week, we see a different kind of David. We see him narrowly avoid an angry and violent decision. What is your ambition? What do you need to put in God's hands? Can you avoid the temptation to take matters into your own hands, to sacrifice your integrity, to make things happen faster or in the way that you want them to happen? Put your hopes into the hands of God. And then when you're tempted to take them back, leave them there and see what God does. Amen.